So sometimes I think my students wonder where I came from. They know I'm well-versed in corn and soybean production, but they also know that I did not come from the same type of farm that they came from. I came from Grooverland, which is a wild, diverse, back-to-the-land homestead in Maryland with small plots of fruits and vegetables and chickens and ducks and small amounts of grain that we harvested by hand. My roots in production agriculture, what I talk about, what I teach about today, they weren't planted until I was 16, when I started to work for Mr. Nevin. Mr. Nevin was not a typical farmer. He was a retired aeronautical engineer with big dreams. Every day he would read articles, he would draw diagrams of solar collectors and water pumping systems and all sorts of amazing things. But I also observed that he was an older man, driven at least partly by a fear that he was running out of time. And so he would spend money relentlessly. To the great dismay of his family, he would spend money with no concern because he had to complete his projects. I think his family also was sometimes concerned that just when they thought their father and grandfather was winding down his farming career, a young, tireless chief collaborator arrived. Someone who was as full of energy as Mr. Nevin was full of dreams. And so I enabled 6 more years of very expensive farming. The first summer that I worked for Mr. Nevin, I was one of 2 farmhands, and Robbie and I did epic amounts of manual labor. Mr. Nevin did the tractor work. We handled thousands and thousands of bales. The most formidable task, though, was waging war on the multiflora rose bushes. I don't know how many of you are familiar with multiflora rose bushes, but they get very, very large. And the only way to defeat a multiflora rose bush is to get into the heart of the multiflora rose bush, to the very base, and to attach a chain around the central canes. And if you're wondering how you get into the heart of a multiflora rosebush, I never figured out the right way to do it. But I would hack a path in, and I would attach the chain, and then I would attempt to wriggle my way out without getting too viciously, you know, cut by the very sharp thorns. And then, with incredible satisfaction, I would observe Mr. Nevin start the tractor, and the chain would tighten. It was attached to the drawbar into the base of a multiflora rose bush. And with a sudden burst, this giant root system would get ripped out of the ground, and Robbie and I were ecstatic. And we did that over and over again, all day long sometimes. And eventually, we would have this incredible vision. We would see a fence row that had no multiflora rose bushes left. And that was incredibly motivating, and that kept us going all that first summer. Eventually, Mr. Nevin and I became pretty close, and he would let me do some tractor work. He still drove the big tractor, but he let me drive a little Ford Ferguson tractor, and I would mainly rake hay. And so one day I had been raking for hours, and I was just about finished. I'd done round after round, and the tractor started to sputter. It came to a stop. It was out of gas. And so I started the long walk back to the shop, and I had gone some distance when, out of the corner of my eye, I noticed that the tractor was not where I had left it. And I spun around and I started to run because the tractor was starting to roll down one of the many long and increasingly steep hills on Mr. Nevin's farm. and I sprinted for all I was worth. Somehow, I don't know, maybe I was imagining that I would leap onto the tractor and apply the brakes before it crashed through the perimeter fence. I did almost catch up with the tractor, and then it suddenly swerved, not towards me, but towards the lone tree in the pasture, a tree that was right next to the fence. And I observed from a very close vantage point the front right tire colliding with that tree. And the tractor bucked up in the air like a bucking bronco. The hay rake lifted many feet off the ground, and then it swiveled, and it came to a stop against the wires of the fence, like a boxer on the ropes. And I caught my breath, and I realized that the tractor really had completely stopped. And so I walked back to the shop, and I got a can of gas. And I did not talk with Mr. Nevin. And I put the gas in, and to my great amazement, it started right up. So I backed away from the fence, and I parked the tractor back where I had parked it before after I had finished that round, and I applied the brake. The next day, we had more work to do, more hay raking to do. Certain times of year when the sun, you know, is giving you an opportunity, you do a lot of hay. So I had done a couple rounds. Everything was working. I mean, it was just a fleeting memory what had happened the day before. And then suddenly I must have hit a little bump and the tire, the front right tire, popped off. And the tractor lurched forward, the axle dug into the ground, and of course everything stopped very quickly, and I almost got catapulted, but I held on to the steering wheel. There was no cab, there was no roll bar, but I held on, and then I looked up, and there was no tire sitting there next to the tractor. It was rolling down the same hill that the tractor had rolled down. And so this time I was going to win. I started running. I'm a runner. I thought I was going to catch this tire for sure. And I did catch up with the tire, but it was starting to bounce. And so I grabbed for the tire, and it bounced over my hands, over the fence. Not even through the fence, over the fence. And it careened down into a ravine, through lots of underbrush. And I heard it smashing off of trees, and I heard the birds starting to squawk. And they're like, who is this intruder coming through our forest? And then at the very bottom of the ravine, I had lost sight of it long, long ago, I heard a splash. So this time I thought, I better go talk to Mr. Nevin. So I walked back, and Mr. Devon, who was so driven to accomplish his projects, was actually a very gentle man. And he looked at me and he said, I think you should call it a day, but tomorrow you will need to find that tire. So I came back and I walked down through the ravine and I could see bark had been removed and rocks had been dislodged. And then when I got to the stream, there was no evidence of the tire. It was completely gone. And I walked along that stream. I loved walking along streams as a kid. And I hopped from rock to rock, hoping that I would hop onto a tire, but there was no tire. I actually searched for 2 days. And I finally came back and told Mr. Nevin, I don't know what to say, but the tire is gone. And Mr. Nevin very gently said, I'll make some calls. Not for someone to find the tire, but he knew this was about a 40-year-old tractor. We're talking about in the late 80s. So this was an old tractor. He knew that it might be hard, but he would find a way to, you know, to source that part, and he found it. And so I had to make a long drive, hour-long drive, to pick up that tire. And we I got it back, and we put it on, and we used that tractor many more times. And you could say that was the end of the story. But I also went back, and I walked along that stream periodically, thinking, someday I'm going to find that tire. But I never did. But I'm sure that tire will be found. Because there are no more fences. There are no more water lines. There are no more cows. Mr. Nevin passed more than 20 years ago, and his land is all developed. So there are big houses up on the tops of those steep hills, big houses with beautiful views, and there are children that live in those big houses that know nothing about what happened many, many years ago when that was farmland, but all children walk down through ravines and walk along streams and hop from rock to rock. And someday, one child will hop onto that tire, that tractor tire, and will think, where did a tractor tire come from? There aren't even any farms around here. Thank you.